Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. It has been less than 2 weeks since President Donald Trump returned to the White House. He promised his second term would begin with a historic start. Fair to say, that much is true.
The heroes of ICE have arrested thousands and thousands of illegal alien criminals.
ICE comes to Chicago.
Fear, a lot of chaos, just a lot of worry.
Trump's border czar says the city's sanctuary status makes it easier for targets to hide.
In Chicago, very well educated. They've been educated how to defy ICE, how to hide from ICE. They call it know your rights. I call it how to escape arrest.
Prompting calls for Mayor Brandon Johnson to testify before Congress.
We did receive an invitation from the Oversight Committee, and it is under legal review.
But local Democrats vow they'll protect immigrant communities.
You are not alone. We stand by you, and we will fight for you.
They're also fighting for billions of federal dollars Trump's suddenly threatening to cut off.
It means no more funding for illegal DEI programs. It means no more funding for the Green New Scam.
We're seeing this administration continue its campaign of chaos.
Meanwhile, Mayor Johnson defends keeping gifted Gucci bags in a locked room. Illinois Republicans sue over gerrymandering.
Just a little corrupt. It may be one of the most corrupt in American history.
And jury deliberations begin in former Speaker Michael Madigan's bribery trial.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune, Hannah Meisel from Capital News Illinois, Katrina Pham from Borderless Magazine, and Carrie Shepard of Axios. Now, just this afternoon, a federal judge, Rick, granted Illinois and other Democratic states' request for a temporary restraining order on this federal funding freeze. Really widespread impact there. This means that Trump's agencies cannot go forward with that freeze. Or does it? Should Illinois and agencies be breathing a sigh of relief?
They shouldn't. And it's quite clear, given the chaos that's been caused, this is truly part of the intent of the original directive from OMB. No one could really precisely say what's covered, what isn't. You're told that Medicaid, for example, is not affected, but yet the systems were being shut down. And, oh, technical glitch. I mean, this is part of the disruption narrative that this Trump 2.0 is pursuing.
They promised shock and awe, and here it is. Hannah, what sort of grants and federal money, what sort of institutions are impacted?
It's so numerous, you can't name them all. I mean, like, there's a lot of federal pass-through money that goes through state budgets, you know, not just Illinois, every state. And that's why we talk about, you know, these federal matching dollars. You know, for example, Medicaid dollars, you know, to maximize that, to take care of as many folks as possible, you got to try to maximize that every year. That is under direct threat. And Medicaid is spent on much more than, you know, you would traditionally think what Medicaid is, you know, help for
healthcare
for folks who are, you know, sick
low
and
income.
Elderly, mm-hmm. low income. And, you know, it affects so many programs, and
I mean, we're talking what, Katrina? We're talking veterans.
Nonprofits, go ahead. Veterans, you know, food banks. One that's often not talked about is the impact to tribal nations who rely on federal funding for a lot of their public services. One example that I can give is the National Immigrant Justice Center here in Chicago. They have a help desk at Chicago's Immigration Court, which is the court that all immigrants have to pass through during their deportation proceedings, and it's notoriously backlogged, notoriously hard to navigate. And so that help desk is a resource for immigrants to go to learn, you know, a little bit more about the court proceedings and how to navigate it while they're navigating their asylum cases, TPS. And they received a stop work order from the Department of Justice telling them to stop those services, and so there's no longer the help desk available to these immigrants who are navigating something that is extremely confusing, especially for those who don't speak English.
Well, and this is, again, despite this court order that says there's a temporary restraining order on what the president is trying to do. So, Carrie, explain some more. Why should agencies, therefore, not be able to say, okay, we're going to get that money as promised?
I think it's, like Rick said, it's a lot of confusion right now. It's even from the top of the week, since the start of the week, service agencies were going online to help their patients, help their clients, and they're getting just pages that are down, which is now happening just tonight. It was just reported that several of federal pages have just been taken down, several that address transgender care, AIDS reporting numbers have been just taken down. So it's a lot of confusion. Several sources I talked to who serve the transgender community and patients say they have no idea yet. They don't know what to tell their patients and their families. So it's a lot of confusion. So as you say, why can't they just move on? I think because they don't have the answers yet.
Well, a couple of things, too, is to remember this is almost in many respects when Illinois went budgetless under
right.
Bruce Rauner. And it's
the great impasse.
And the grants are these safety. What suffered the most during the Rauner impasse were these
social safety net
mm-hmm. organizations, which are the ones that are most heavily dependent upon.
Because they're on shoestring budgets.
They're not for profits. They're literally week to week on making payroll for many of them.
And it trickles down, right? State relies on the federal, the city relies on what they have, $4 billion something, you know, in federal grants that they rely on, like Katrina's saying, and then it goes down to these agencies, it goes down to nonprofits, so it's just going to be a trickle down effect.
But you also had the press secretary, for example, say, the memo was rescinded, but the order has not been
rescinded,
which is actually great for the new press secretary, who becomes the subject of one of those injunctions, is cited by the federal judge because basically this administration can't say what it's doing.
And, you know, I want to hear as well from Congressman Brad Schneider, who I spoke with earlier this week. He told me that the funding freeze came as a surprise to him and other members of Congress as well.
And effectively what the administration is doing is stealing that money and channeling it towards oligarchs like Elon Musk. This is something that is beyond outrageous. It's illegal. And we need to mobilize. Congress needs to act to protect our prerogatives. It is Congress who decides what programs we want to invest in and how much money we want to invest in those programs.
So Congressman Schneider saying it is time for Congress to act. We have the power of the purse. Rick, what are the chances that is going to happen when the Senate, when the U.S. House are controlled by the Republican Party?
Well, I think given this litigation, you want to push it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, granted, we know it's a conservative majority there. Nevertheless, certain things are pretty much fundamentally in law that it is Congress that is the appropriators. That's delineated in the Constitution. And what you have, again, as part of this disruptive nature, is Trump pushing the boundaries of what does the executive branch get to do.
But do you see Congress saying, okay, the president wants these cuts, let's make them, or because these impact their own districts, is this an area where the GOP might begin to push back, Anna?
I mean, I think for now, the Republicans who have taken over control of both, not just, you know, numbers-wise, the folks who are now in charge, the legislative leaders, they are a different Republican than 5-10 years ago. I don't see them pushing back, at least not, you know, for Trump's, first 100 days. We always give deference to this idea of first 100 days. I think that you're going to see Republicans, you know, who, like you mentioned, of course, every person's district are going to be impacted. You know, this money goes to schools, rural schools. You know, they are on shoestring budgets. They
I think that's why mm-hmm. Republicans are not going to just acquiesce to this, is because, yes, that money flows to all of their districts. And we all know, you know, nothing
makes... So could this create a rift, then, between Trump and Republicans in Congress?
Again, is it real? Is this all real?
We don't know.
And we don't know the answer to that. But certainly there was Republican pushback as well in Washington over these funding announcements. And, you know, if there's federal money to build a district, a road in a highway or a bridge in a district that's Republican, and it's like, nope, no more federal grants, there'll be some pushback.
What is very real, particularly for immigrants residing in Chicago, is that raids have begun. Now, Katrina, what do we know about what has happened in the city and surrounding areas thus far?
So what we know so far is what CPD Superintendent Snelling has told us, which is that roughly 100 people so far, as of Tuesday earlier this week, have been arrested in the Chicago area. What we also know is that across the nation, according to X, ICE has said that there have been more than 4,000 arrests of immigrants across the nation, which is kind of on pace for the last administration in terms of the daily average of arrests that are happening so far, between 300 and 375 on average. What we we also know is that the people who are being targeted, the Trump administration has said that people with criminal convictions have been targeted. But the reality on the ground is we've seen some collateral arrests happening. That is something that was banned under the Biden administration, but is now in place under the Trump administration, to where if ICE is targeting a particular individual, people who are also in the vicinity, who are also in the area of the raid, can also be deported or arrested as a result of that raid happening.
To that end, let's hear from the Trump administration's border czar, Tom Homan, who says, yes, the focus is on criminals, but he says that there will be more collateral arrests in sanctuary cities.
Because when we're forced into the neighborhood to find the bad guy, he's probably going to be with others. And we're not going to instruct ICE agents to ignore their oath, ignore the law. If they're here illegally, they're going to go, and they're going to go to jail too. And that's why I'm imploring the sanctuary cities, let us in the jail, arrest the bad guy in the jail where the community is safe, the officer is safe, the alien is safe.
So to be clear, the governor has said that if you are somebody with a criminal record, Illinois doesn't want you and you should go back. But Carrie, what do you make of Homan's argument there? Could it be that sanctuary protections are backfiring?
I mean, and also to be clear, Sheriff Tom Dart has said we don't rent out beds to ICE as well. I mean, and as, of course, Mayor Brandon Johnson has said as well, we're sticking to our sanctuary city status. I mean, obviously, Chicago has been in Tom Homan and President Trump's crosshairs for quite a while now. I think Superintendent Snelling's message earlier this week, it was confusing. I would say that it was confusing to immigrant communities to hear, okay, yes, continue to go to school, continue to live your life, you know, don't be afraid, that's where you're safe. But as we saw last week, of course, we ended up, you know, it came out that at CPS, it was the Secret Service that came, it wasn't ICE agents, it was a communication mix-up, we understand, but that didn't make anybody feel safe at that school in Little Village, a largely Mexican community. So, I mean, how do people know to feel safe if they're continuing to live their lives?
Is that what you're hearing on the ground, Katrina?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of fear about these ICE raids. And I mean, there's a proliferation on social media of like posts about, I just saw ICE like down the street. I just saw like ICE at the grocery store, right? But these are not always confirmed. And so when there's a lot of talk about ICE raids in the news and also in people's networks in the community, a lot of fear comes up. And so a lot of people that we've been talking to.
Disruptive strategy to make people worried, concerned. Do not go about your normal activities because you could be subject to arrest and deportation.
Also, as we've learned time and time again, the criminal justice system doesn't dish out justice in the most equitable way, right? So some of this collateral damage we might be talking about might be a person who maybe has a drug conviction from 30 years ago or whatnot, right? Versus somebody who's maybe, you know, has a murder conviction. You know, it's not black and white all the time. I know we'd love to think it is, but as we've proven time and time again, that's not the case. That's not how it works.
Crime can mean so many things.
Crime can mean a lot of things, yes, exactly.
And under the administration's, you know, new interpretation is... They're justifying these collateral arrests because they say that anyone who is here illegally is now, you know, they're all kind of being treated the same despite
you're a criminal because you don't have legal status.
You know, despite the fact that they're, you know, they're saying like, yes, we're prioritizing people who have these, you know, prior arrests or they're fugitive. You know, the Tribune had this story about a father in Elgin who, you know, it was his stepson who was being targeted, and it was a fugitive arrest from the U.S. Marshal's office, but then it turned into an ICE situation when he was found hiding in the attic. This is someone who's been in the country for 24 years, they reported. And, you know, these kind of things, the whole point, like Rick said, is, you know, encourage people, I guess, to self-deport. This is the term that so many people are using, and the self-deport, you know, it's of course not as simple as these folks would like to make it sound. You know, people have made their lives here for years.
Very, very little is. I want to go, before we move on, because these raids in Chicago got a lot of airplay in part because Dr. Phil was there. Who wants to weigh in on that? Was that helpful, appropriate?
I think it's interesting to think about the fact that Dr. Phil was invited to be a part of these raids because, as a member of the media, it's been hard to get information from ICE, right, about who is being arrested, who is being targeted, and yet Dr. Phil gets, you know, an exclusive access to these raids and gets, you know, exclusive airtime on an app where you can, like, install it and see these raids happening. So I think it's all about controlling the narrative and, you know, by choosing who gets to see these raids in action, by choosing that it's only Dr. Phil who gets to see this in action and not local media officials or people, members of the local media, it controls,
and truly,
you know,
making a
see.
Show of yeah. the situation.
It's a reality TV administration, okay? It's rooted in that. Tom Homan's a friend of Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil just launched his own TV station. So this is the promotion of that TV station.
Admittedly, I had no idea
going
what his
back
latest
and,
platform
and,
was.
And he has been a immigration enforcement advocate repeatedly.
So a very friendly, not just audience, but a friendly guide to
right.
this. Really.
And his folks, as we tried to reach him at the Tribune, they wanted to know what side of the issue we were on.
Well, there we go. And the side of the issue is that we are journalists. I want to go to you, Carrie, on another executive order, because you've been covering the impact on local individuals that are seeking transgender care that could be impacted by an executive order. Could you give an explanation?
Sure. So Lurie Children's Hospital is really, you know, obviously this is a top-notch children's hospital in the country, but also they have really been at the forefront of gender-affirming care for decades. They've had a program for it for a very long time. Talking to them this week, they also did part of the chaos. They don't know yet. They don't have answers yet of how this is going to affect their patients and their families. But they just are the executive orders, this deluge of executive orders. Just earlier in the month, Trump said that officially the government acknowledges two sexes, male and female. And, you know, I had a quote from a doctor who said, well, that's great that the government says there are only two sexes. I mean, the government can say there are only two cancers. That doesn't make it right, right? You know, there are more than that. So then it came out about attacking gender-affirming care. And, you know, these are young people that are in the middle of their care. They are in the process. You can't just stop that. That would have detrimental effects on anyone who is in the middle of any sort of treatment. So they are still waiting and still kind of not stopping anything right now because they don't have any answers. So it's just a question of, you know, understanding what this really means and where the restraining order on some of these federal funding will go.
Let's take it from D.C. to Chicago, and in particular to a particular room, evidently, in the mayor's quarters that I didn't know had existed. Apparently, the inspector general tried to get into this room that is filled with gifts that folks have given to the mayor, but was turned away. What is this all about, Carrie?
I didn't know about this either. I had no idea about the mayor's gift room. And I know we're kind of snickering, but there is a larger issue at play here. But the snickering comes from the fact that the inspector general put out a report earlier this week that revealed that there are, you know, designer purses, handbags, shoes, other items that apparently the mayor and the previous mayor, Lori Lightfoot, has accepted and are allegedly stored in some room. We don't know if they're stored there because Mayor Johnson's administration did not let anyone from the inspector general's office into said room. And, you know, there is this long history, you know, you're not supposed to accept anything over $50, you know, from anyone. The mayor's office isn't supposed to. If it is, then it belongs to the people of Chicago. So in other words, those are our designer handbags, Amanda.
Hi, Colleen.
So those belong to us. So the investigators with the IG's office, they went and they said, we need to see these. They said, we're just members of the public. And they were denied. They sent FOIA requests. They were denied. So finally, they said, look, you know, we need to see this log. Every other administration has shown us this log.
So beyond the fact that I'm not currently carrying a Gucci bag with me, why does this matter?
Well, one is the fact that this had been kind of an understanding, an agreement that goes back to Eugene Sawyer's time as mayor, that the Board of Ethics was not going to enforce this proper logging and cataloging of gifts. And so it wasn't until the IG really looked into it and finds out from the Board of Ethics, Oh, yeah. We cut a deal with the mayor's office a long time ago. It, don't worry about it.
But we don't have a complete log of who gave the gifts, and therefore it's hard to ask a question of why and what did they
expect. And we don't know if they're in that room. We just have a log.
Or if somebody's wearing a pair of cufflinks or size 14 shoes.
And I would say, just quickly, I talked to the IG today. And, you know, as we're talking about this presidency, Trump administration and chaos, I think this is a moment that we really need to understand that our local leaders, our mayor, our governor are really, you know, everything is keeping calm, and this is a moment where we don't want to be questioning the ethics and what's going on literally behind closed doors.
The mayor's defense was somewhere along those lines of worry about the dictator in D.C. is really what the mayor had said.
I think Katrina. We can worry about both.
Yeah, he called it a so-called investigation and then put the blame on Trump and just kind of moved the spotlight off of himself. But I think there's still some real concern from a lot of people about how they can trust a mayor. You know, the mayor's telling them that this is a safe city for them, that this is a sanctuary city. But then, you know, behind closed doors, he's hiding all of these gifts and money that, you know, we actually don't know if it's there or not or how much it is or who it's from. So it's definitely an erosion of public trust.
Well, now, Hannah, let's go to Springfield. Illinois Republicans have filed a lawsuit over a legislative map that they say Democrats drew, that they illegally gerrymandered it to their advantage. What's the legal argument here?
Well, you know, these maps were passed in 2021, so almost 4 years ago. I remember all of the late nights that we spent, you know, debating them on the House and Senate floor. You know, the Republicans say, hey, we've now had two election cycles under these maps, and so that's proof that, you know, we were illegally shut out, you know, that we're not keeping to the compactness, the contiguousness of, you know, everything that the Illinois Constitution lays out that these districts have to be. And, you know, these maps were already challenged in federal court in 2021. Of course, that, you know, nothing changed there. In challenging it in the Illinois Supreme Court, you know, I don't think that anything could change. There is a longstanding, you know, history precedent of that court not wanting to interfere with legislative business.
Well, and this is a court controlled by Democrats.
Nerd alert. We're talking redistricting here. But two things. One, the previous Republican challenges were brought in federal court, okay? And they involve Federal Voting Rights Act violations alleged. It's a new argument because you cannot argue partisan gerrymandering in federal court. The U.S. Supreme Court says that is a non-justiciable issue, okay? You can't, so in state court, yes, you can argue it. Two, there's a couple of things. The other Republicans brought this challenging, noting the fair and clear election cycle of the Constitution. Fair, and that's been cited in two other states, Pennsylvania and North Carolina, as reasons to go and tear up the maps. So they're citing a legal precedent, but from other states.
And we've got less than a minute left, but Rick, they are making this argument before a Supreme Court
that's
that is
five to two Democrat. Sure.
Is that going to factor in?
They don't have to take the case.
So we don't really ever
To know. It's actually, I want to see the rationale for why they don't take the case, but that's my expectation.
We'll be watching that. And actually, we do have 30 more seconds, so I'm going to get one other question in because I know you reported on this. Why wait 3 years? Is that going to kill their argument and maybe give the Supreme Court its reason?
That could be one of the arguments there. But again, as Hannah said, it provides a track record to argue how impossible it is in some of these districts to elect someone of the minority party.
Basically, they waited so that they would have election information to show the GOP's losses.
That's their argument.
We are out of time with that. Our appreciation to Rick Pearson, Hannah Meisel, Katrina Pham, and Carrie Shepard. We will be back to wrap things up in a moment. But first, a peek at a special WTTW news program that's airing Monday night. Here's Brandis Friedman with more.
On Monday, February 3rd at 5:30 p.m., WTTW and Chicago community nonprofit My Block, My Hood, My City present The State of Our City, a WTTW News Town Hall. I'll host a discussion with questions from a live studio audience of Chicago residents. We'll get a chance to raise issues with Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and other government officials and community stakeholders, including My Block, My Hood, My City founder and CEO Jamal Cole. Join us for a town hall discussion streaming live on Monday, February 3rd, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on WTTW platforms. And Chicago Tonight viewers can watch the first half hour during the regular broadcast on WTTW.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
Thanks for joining us on our Friday night show. So, yes, be sure to join us as well on Monday. Remember, you can stream The Week in Review and Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs that you may have missed. Now for The Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching and stay healthy and safe and have a good night. Hannah, to you, because you've been in the courtroom for the final arguments. Now that it's in the jury's hands, the fate of Speaker Madigan. What do you expect that they are talking about?
I mean, they have 100 pages of jury instructions to contend with. They had 3 months of testimony to contend with, hundreds of secret recordings, tons of documents. You know, these people are invested. They've already, yes. You know, they spent 3.5 months of their lives. I don't think that they're rushing. Of course, they want to get back to their lives and their jobs. But I think that they are properly invested in the outcome and, you know, treating it fairly and with consideration.
Anything that you heard in the sort of closing arguments that really stuck with you and therefore might stick in their ears?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the use of...
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.